All right. So we are back for another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything. I'm your host, Cole Brzezinski. Thank you for joining me for another episode where we get a look at people in a myriad of different fields. We get a look at what motivates them, what some of their fears are, and maybe we can learn something about their field too. So today with me, I'm sitting with Rebecca Such. Rebecca, would you introduce yourself, what you do, and where you're from?
Absolutely. So as you said, my name's Rebecca Such, and I am a freelance writer and editor here in Bellingham, Washington.
All right. So today I want to pick apart some of the myths, unpleasant truths, and the unfortunate realities about your freelance field of writing and editing. So right off the bat, give us the harsh reality. What is the experience of being a freelance writer and editor?
Yeah, you want the tea. Okay. Yeah. So being a freelancer is very difficult in ways I did not expect beforehand. You have to be very self-motivated, self-reliant. I thought I was naturally that way until I had a whole space to do things on my own time. And I was like, well, I could also work on this project in my apartment. So you really have to be self-motivated. It can also be a little lonely at times if you don't put yourself in a position for it to be otherwise. And also, it's just very stressful. It's a lot of time management, and you are in charge of everything yourself. And I don't think people realize what that means. That doesn't just mean you have to write on your timeline. That means you have to have a website. You need to engage with media. You need to be a part of networking circles. You need to put yourself out there in a million and 10 different ways. So you are in charge of marketing yourself, selling yourself, putting yourself out there on top of writing, editing, whatever it is that you're doing, and usually managing multiple projects at the same time. Mm. So it is a ton of responsibility that you don't see coming until you have to deal with it all, especially taxes.
Yes, taxes was fun. We did our business's first year of taxes just a few months ago. Mm. And I was like, oh, so this is what all these bookkeepers do. I can see why they're the ones that do it.
Yep. They earn their money.
They earn their money. Yes. But yeah, no, we've had a lot of the same experience ourselves where, you know, when I started this, I thought we were just going to be doing some audio production because we started as a podcast studio. And obviously that's evolved, which has been wonderful. It's great. Some growing pains with that, but like the good kinds. I think about 20% of my monthly work is spent editing though. Everything else is just miscellaneous jobs that need to get done, whether that is networking or website development, what have you, just learning new tasks and new skills. It's kind of what you have to do if you're going to be independent.
Absolutely. So much work than you anticipate.
So, okay. You talked about how sometimes it's a lonely job, but one of the things that we've talked about a fair bit already is networking. Mm-hmm. Scale of 1 to 10. How important is networking, with 10 being absolutely critical?
Oh, I kind of feel like it's a 10. You got to network if you're going to freelance. It is absolutely an essential part of the job. And there's different ways to do that. So it could mean different things, but you have to put yourself out there and you have to reach out. You got to cold call, warm call, all the calls.
So like cold calls, this is something I've always thought was interesting. How many cold calls do you think you make probably over the course of a week or a month?
So to clarify, I don't actually call anyone. I don't do like cold calls, like actually, but I mean, I have to go introduce myself to people and go into settings where there are people who don't necessarily think they want writing. And then I kind of change their mind subtly. You kind of sneak up on people and you're like, actually, this is why you need writing. So it's just a lot of putting yourself out there in situations where people may or may not understand what you do and may or may not think they want it, and proving to them that actually it would really come in handy.
Yeah. One of the things that, and again, like, it's not a malicious thing, but it is part of a conversation where you're like, hey, how's your X going? I know for us, it's oftentimes like, hey, how's your social media marketing going? Just because like we're in marketing circles, we're curious. And every now and then it's a pain point. They're like, oh man, we got a problem. Well, what's your problem? Well, son of a gun, I might have an answer for you. Wouldn't that be funny?
Yep.
Yeah. But no, like, it's one of the fun parts of networking where you get to meet people, you get to solve problems together. And what's really nice is that there's a great sense of accountability, because if you do a bad job, people know where you work.
Yep.
Some of them might have even been to your house at a certain point if you got to that stage. Okay, so let's talk about something different though. Creative exhaustion. One of the things, I'll start with an anecdote and then I'll pass it over to you, because I know we ran into this a lot with some of our first clients where they wanted to start regular shows, whether that was monthly or weekly. And very quickly, we found that they had three challenges. One, of course, was financial. if they were doing it for more than a little while, the financial consideration, that was fine. They could handle it. The other one was administrative costs. How much time are they putting into these recordings, to these projects? For busy folks, that's a big ask. But if it's important enough, they'll make the time. The big thing that we found oftentimes killed some of these projects was the creative demands that was placed on people. Because it's hard to think of new things every day, or even just every week, nonetheless, every month. So, in your field, how do you deal with creative exhaustion?
Yeah, that's a really hard one, and one that I've been working on for a while now. So if anyone finds the secret to that, let me know. But for me, it's definitely giving myself a break and giving myself time. And that can be really hard when this is your business and you don't really have time for that. The one positive is, for me, I have a lot of diverse types of work, so I kind of pause and do another. But I really have to make sure I make time for personal projects, not necessarily just writing, but I have to force myself to take time to be alone and work on my own creative endeavors, because otherwise it becomes, I have to be creative for all these other reasons. And it's, I want to be creative for myself. And that opens up that window again. I feel like gives me a breath of fresh air. Because if I'm sitting here trying to be creative because I need to be creative, everything shuts down. Yeah. I don't want to do it necessarily. I mean, I do, because I'm really nerdy and I love this stuff. But it's really easy to shut down when it feels forced. And so I have to give myself time to just work on a project that's completely unrelated. That can be baking cookies. It can be painting my wardrobe with flowers on it, which I do, or other things like that. But yeah, I really have to do that. And I have to make myself leave and go outside a lot because I work from home. I have a home office, but I do a lot of where I'll change scenery. So I'll go to a coffee shop, or I'll go get some writing or editing done at a park, something like that, where I feel like I'm out of my comfort zone. And it kind of opens that up, because I have nothing else I can focus on but the writing. And I'm in this beautiful new space that gives me a new headspace.
I know it's always interesting talking to like freelance creative types, because once it becomes your main job, it becomes such a burden that you have to keep doing these creative things all the time. I remember talking to some authors specifically, and one of them had a great point, because he's like, routine is critical. If you're going to do it long-term, you need a epic routine, and creatives really tend to not like routines. They want to be free. They want to be able to do things as needs require. He's like, no, I realized that I needed time. And so like he would do a little bit of creative writing in the beginning of his day, and then he would spend the midday with his family. And, you know, sometimes that involved just spending time with the kids. Sometimes that was doing housework, but he needed that time where he could just divest himself. And then by the time the evening came around, when he would get back to the rest of his workday, which was, you know, 8 hours, so 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the evening, that's when he would do the rest of his creative writing, because at that point he was able to come back to it with a fresh perspective.
Yeah. I think the difficulty for me is mainly that, like, with journalism, it's kind of all over the place, so I don't have a specific routine. And I do school. I'm in school still as well. Right. I'm back in a degree program. And so there's no specific set schedule to my day, typically, but I've had to force a schedule where I could. And something that's been really helpful for me is I've never been a morning person, but I started by waking myself up 10 minutes early to do some stretches and exercises. And then I did 10 minutes extra later on, and made it writing time that I'm not allowed to work on any work for unless it's something I just really am excited about. So it's 10 minutes of waking up my body by doing exercise and stretches, and then 10 minutes of waking up my mind by writing in some way that just is natural and exciting to me, to kind of keep that creativity flowing. Because it's not necessarily something where I'm going to write the whole chapter of my book, because that's 10 minutes. But it's waking up that creativity in a way that there's zero pressure. I'm literally not allowed to spend that time on anything that doesn't excite me and make me really want to do it. And if I can't do it that day, then I'm making myself do 10 extra minutes of working out, because I got to get something moving.
No, it's probably similar to that same mindset as to why it's so important to make your bed in the morning, because it's not about the bed getting done. It's the fact that you got something done.
Exactly.
It's the fact that you've accomplished something, and it's something that is conducive to the rest of your day.
Exactly. It just gets that mindset going early in the morning. So I do the same thing. I make my bed first thing in the morning, and I just have to keep this routine, because I know by that point I've accomplished things I needed to accomplish. I am in the right mindset to continue doing these things throughout the day. It's all about mindset.
Brilliant. Okay. Let's move on to a different aspect of the creative field. So one of the things that all creatives end up facing is an undervaluing of their work because they presume, well, it's just a couple words. Mm-hmm. It's just a blog post. It's just a video, what have you. Why are you charging so much? So do you find that you often get undervalued for your work?
Oh yeah, that's that's a very common issue and one that I understand because I was shocked looking into writing for the first time that you could make that much money off it. I also didn't understand at the time how taxes work for freelancers. But, you know, I definitely understand it, but it's a big issue where people come into it thinking, oh, you're just going to put some words on a page, right? Mm. It's like, I didn't go into student debt to put some words on a page. Believe you me, I would not have taken that risk. There's so much more to it. There's technique, style, finding the right voice. There's branding and messaging. And everything is very specific and has to be done in the right way to reach your target audience, giving the message in a clear but creative and relatable way. There's so much more that goes into it than people realize. Mm. And so, yeah, it really does get undervalued very easily. But when you do it yourself and when you hire a writer, typically you'll notice a difference right away. And that's for good reason. So we're worth money, guys, I promise. But it's really hard to explain that to people. And also, I don't expect anyone to pay more than they can. So it's one of those things where I have to accept that some people cannot pay for a professional writer, but you also have to accept that you're not getting professional writing and it is going to have a difference.
What are some of the common kind of like pushbacks that you get from potential clients, whether that's, well, I can write myself. Why do I need to pay you that much to do it? How would you explain it to them?
I mean, pretty similarly to how I just did. I think it's hard to explain to anyone who's already in that mindset. So sometimes I have to kind of pick my battles and decide what it's worth getting into. But I try to explain to them that you can write it yourself all you want, and you're just going to put your message on paper. I am going to transform it. I am going to make it into what you didn't know you wanted. I'm going to listen to what you say, take all of these years of training and experience and background that writers are given, and I'm going to turn it into what actually works, because you have this idea of this is what I want, but you're not writing for yourself. You're not targeting yourself. You're targeting a specific audience, and you need to know what they want to hear and how they want to hear it and what to do to make them even find it in the first place. And there's so much more that goes into it that even if you have a basic idea of that, it's really difficult to find the nuances without having been trained in them. And I understand for some people, it makes more sense to write on their own, but it is going to be different. There's a big difference. And if you understand style and tone, it's great, but you need to understand how that works for your audience in more than just the words themselves. It's very complicated. There's formatting, there's design, everything that goes into it. So anyway.
So like when you're going through that process, and I've liked the image that when you're going through a consultation with a potential client, it is as much an interview of you as it is of the client themselves.
Absolutely.
It is very important for freelancers and creatives and anyone in any field to say, just because you're coming to me does not mean that you're entitled to my services. Mm-hmm. What are some of the tells that you have that someone is not going to make for a good client and that you ought to turn them away?
Ooh, so I like that you mentioned consultations. That is a very important part for me. What I do, especially with editing, is I'll have a $25 consultation. So it's a small fee, but it is a fee. And then if we go through the consultation, I'll do a 5-page sample edit. And that's for free. And if we do sign a contract, their $25 fee will go as kind of a deposit. It'll be taken off of their final charge. Because the thing is, if they're not willing to have a consultation and spend $25, they're not willing to spend $1,600 to $3,000 on their project, which is understandable. But it's literally not worth my time to spend an hour talking to you if you're not willing to spend $25. On top of that, the sample edit, it comes off as, oh, this is so nice for you, but it's also good for me, because if I'm reading this and it's horribly racist in the first 5 pages, I don't want to attach myself to that project. So I know now and I can run now. And also you can run if you don't like what I'm saying in my my edits, my comments. Like you said, it's an interview for me as well. And it's really important to recognize that I may not always be the best person for a story. Like if someone comes up to me and has a travel log that they've written, that's so great for you. I am not trained for that kind of writing. I am not interested enough in that, but I know people who are, and I will send you their way happily. And you'd want me to send them your way, send you their way. You know, it works better for everyone.
I remember we came across this point. It wasn't even that long ago, but I thought it was brilliant, and we've implemented it into our own strategy. And it's of course great from a negotiating tactic, but it's also great just from a keep in mind who we are, this relationship, because you're coming to me for a service, but that's not because you're buying me to do work for you. That's because you're coming to me because you want help with a project, and I'm going to come alongside and we're going to get that project done. I'm going to do the lion's share of the work, but you're still going to be involved. And obviously in creative works, a lot of these people who are commissioning us to do work, it is such a personal affair for them.
Absolutely.
Whether it's business or for their hobbies. And one of the things that we've started to do with all of our meetings is to say, hey, we're going to have a discovery consultation. We're going to talk about what your goals are, what your project demands are, what your needs, limitations are. We're going to get it all figured out. And if by the end of the meeting, we decide that we're interested, then we will offer you a bid. Just to let them understand that, hey, just because you come to us does not mean, again, you're entitled to our service. We're here to have a conversation to see if this is going to be a right fit. Because if it's not, we'll send you to people who we think will do a better job. Whether that's they're going to do everything that I could have done, or because you need something different entirely. Maybe you don't need an editor yet. Maybe you just need to practice a little bit more because it's too far gone. You need to build up those skills more. But no, it's a brilliant way to start off a relationship because that's what these are. These aren't just procurements of products. No, we're creatives. This is a long going relationship.
Absolutely. I think that's essential is just recognizing that this is personal. This is a connection, and that's something you want to be ongoing. I mean, as an editor, not just the fact that you could have them come back with another book. Usually people do multiple rounds of editing. You want them to come back to you to see how you feel about their past edits, things like that. But it's also just, like you said, this is very personal work to them. And it's honestly personal work to me too, doing my edits. And so I want to make sure we're communicating. And I love that you talked about like the expectations being upfront of like, this is not me promising my work. And that's something I try to do as well. I'm like, yeah, we'll do this consultation. And by the end, hopefully we'll have an idea of whether or not we're a good fit, and we'll talk about it then. And so, and one of the other things to go back to your earlier question is, I always say ahead of time, please review the EFA rate calculator, because I need people to have an idea in advance of how much they're spending. Because $25 does not necessarily say to them, you're about to spend this many thousands of dollars, or hundreds, depending on the project. So I try to tell them, look at this calculator ahead of time, because it also talks about writing services. So I'll say, look at this, get an idea for what these rates are, and then you'll probably be happier looking at mine. And if they're not willing to do that, if they come in and they're like, oh, I didn't really look at it, that's a red flag, because this is reciprocal. They also are going to wind up putting in a little bit of work. This is a relationship. I'm not just doing work and chucking it back at them. They have a part to play in this as well. And if they're not willing to so much as look at the EFA rate online, it's kind of a red flag. So
can you take a second and describe the EFA? What is that?
Yes. Sorry. The Editors Freelance Association. And so they are kind of a union for editors. I am not a member currently. It's one of those things where once you've really made it, it might be more worth it. But there's smaller ones like ACES I'm a part of, things like that. But essentially, they have a rate calculator that is free to non-members as well to use. And so they let you kind of have an idea of, based on your experience and what kind of work you're doing specifically, you can narrow down what kind of range of pay you can expect to pay or offer a client.
That's good to know. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit. So we've talked a lot about the relationship that you have with your clients. We've talked about some of the challenges creatively, the demands that you face. Let's talk about freelancing in a little bit more of a general sense.
Sure.
Why should someone look at their current life if they're unhappy with their work and say, you know what, maybe freelance is the answer? What are the pros with becoming a freelancer?
So there's a lot of freedom in being a freelancer, hence, you know, freelancer. Shocking, I know. But it really is so helpful to look at the control that I have in things and just remember, like, I chose to be here and this is why I'm here, and I get to decide which projects I take on and what I'm doing. And I've worked with some really good bosses in my life, and I've worked with some really bad bosses. And if you're unhappy with your work, there's something that needs to change. And when you're a freelancer, you can change that at any point in time. If I decide I don't want to do newsletters anymore, which I doubt will ever happen because I love them, then I can just say one day, you know what, I want to try UX writing. I can switch it up. And I still have the experience and training I need to do that, but just less so. So there's just a lot of creative freedom. Even when there's not, it's still challenging. Even when you have a very limited project, you get to decide how you're going to go about that. And if you don't like it, you cut it off. Mm. And that's just, it's a really important thing to some people. Some people like more structure, being told what to do. And other people that are self-reliant enough to do it really prefer to just take charge of that themselves, which is easier to do in creative fields.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. So inversely then, what are some of the reasons someone should be wary when it comes to becoming a freelancer?
Yeah, it's definitely a bigger on-taking than you tend to realize. People think, oh yeah, I'll just work from home and get on my computer and do all these things. You have to take 10 billion steps before you can even start working most of the time, because you have to prepare for what taxes are going to be like. You have to have a website. You have to have a portfolio. If you don't have any experience, you have to make samples or do whatever for your portfolio. There's so many steps before that. And on top of that, a lot of people don't realize how much communication and how much you talk to people. I think people think, oh, well, I'm going to be in my office so I can be introverted and not talk to people all day. And realistically, that's not the case. Mm. It is not going to be a common thing for someone to make it as a freelancer without going out of their way to meet people and make connections. You're not going to find work and you're not going to sustain work. And everything you do is a relationship. So you need to maintain that relationship. So I think if you're not prepared for that, don't just fall into the idea of, oh, I can work from home and not work with people. You're going to be working with people.
Yeah. No, 100%. I remember when we started this, because it was almost a, it's not, it wasn't almost, it was a series of happy accidents where when I eventually got this studio space open, I had this wonderful epiphany that I need to learn how to do my job. And as with every creative, when you go out there and you're pitching your services and saying like, hey, I could do all these things. It's like, wow, that sounds really impressive. Let's see your portfolio. I'm like, oh, I should probably build a portfolio, but I need to make money now. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you get into that weird balance of, well, desperation really. And so it's wonderful that if you're trying to become a freelancer, maybe like a slow ramp up into that might be what's best.
Yeah, I definitely was very fortunate in that I was working as a nanny and the families were very understanding and very supportive. I was a part of the family, so they were more than willing to make adjustments to help me kind of still have hours, but cut out what I need to in order to make time for freelancing. And so it's been a very slow transition. And so many people felt like they just had to take a jump and quit their job and give everything into this. Mm. And please don't do that unless you are very well prepared for that, because it is a big change and there's no certainty. And so, yeah, you really have to be prepared and have a portfolio ready. Even if that's all samples, that's what you do. You got to do it.
Yeah. And you know what? For those of us who make the bold decision to just go out there immediately on your own, you'll figure it out. It will get worked out eventually. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a bumpy road.
Exactly. It'll work out. You just have to have a lot of patience with yourself and clients and people who don't understand your industry.
Yes. And when you eventually do find people that are willing to take you on for work, be grateful.
Absolutely.
Make sure you say thanks. Okay. So at the same time, the personal qualities that one has to have, you alluded to this already. There are some people that probably just won't ever make very good freelancers. They're probably the same people that won't ever make very good entrepreneurs. What are the qualities that are critical for being an effective and ideally a well-earning freelancer?
Yeah. So self-reliance is the most obvious. You don't have a boss. You are your boss. You have to treat yourself as if you are a boss. You have to really put into motion schedules or routines, whatever you can do to make yourself structured. You also have to be a communicator. That is number one key. Yeah. I say it about literally everything. I know I'm a media and communications major, so I may be biased, but communication is essential in trust. And that is an essential part of being a freelancer, because you don't have a boss, you're your own boss, but you also mm-hmm. don't have guaranteed clients because you're not under anybody. You have to communicate. You have to communicate clearly and upfront. So even if it's something where the client didn't understand something that you assumed they would naturally understand about hiring a freelancer or a writer, that's still going to be on you, and they're still going to be mad at you for not communicating it. Mm. So if you forgot to tell them, oh, actually, if you need this extra thing, it's going to be more money, just because maybe they shouldn't have assumed that doesn't mean anything to them. A lot of the time, they're going to get upset with you. Mm. So you have to set all expectations from the get-go, which yeah. is why even for smaller projects, I'll have a longer consultation if I need to make sure you understand what we're doing here and what we're not doing here.
Yeah.
You have to set your scope, and you have to communicate it, and you have to stick to it. So boundaries is the other one. Definitely.
No, I love the point on boundaries, because we've learned that the hard way, where there are so many times where we're so eager to get the work and like, yeah, we'll figure it out when we get there. And so often with business, it is a series of, yeah, we'll figure it outs. Mm-hmm. Because that's just kind of what you got to do. And it's great because it opens more doors afterwards. But there have been so many times where we're like, this isn't worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, you've already committed to it. So you pull through, you eat the cost, whatever that may be. But man, is it so important to have those straightforward conversations early on, just so that there is no confusion. Mm-hmm. And so many of the people that do this so well, they come across as arrogant or crass, and they're not. Mm-hmm. They've just learned from their mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other side of that is your own boundaries and sticking to them yourself. Like mm-hmm. you need to set boundaries for yourself as well of like, I won't work outside these hours, or I won't forego this thing that's important to me for work, things like that. And also, I won't accept less money than I put on my website. Because especially when there's someone where you're like, I really like this client, or I really like this project, it's so easy to let those slip. And maybe I do a little bit now and then. I shouldn't say that. No one expect that from me. But you really need to have those boundaries in place, and you need to stick to them. And if you're not totally sure that you can have the willpower and go through the discomfort of having those conversations with yourself and others, then be very wary of that. Because that's something that was not something I was good at my whole life. Like I could not do boundaries, and even for myself. And I had to work very hard the last few years to make sure that I am in a place where I can do that clearly. Mm. Otherwise I would have lost a lot of money, which means I'm struggling to pay rent. Yeah. So it's essential. It really is.
Yeah. I count myself amongst that camp of people where the moment they see a need, they just feel compelled to get involved mm-hmm. and to get it fixed, to get it helped. And especially in that first year of business, there were so many times where like someone just needs a job done mm-hmm. and you know what? Sure. We'll figure it out, man. You only have $200. Yeah. We'll make an hour long video. Why not? Yeah. $200. That's a lot of money. I need to put food on the table, mm-hmm. not realizing that it's got opportunity costs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you miss out when you're just taking anything anyone throws at you, because there are some people out there where if they realize that you're willing to put in extraordinary work because you're willing to just for the sake of it, well, they'll make use of you. They'll put you to work.
Yep.
And they'll get what they want, and you will get something that you think you need. Mm-hmm. And then everyone walks away less happy.
Yeah. I mean, if you're charging so much, especially with like, one of the issues with word count is also timing, time yeah. spent. And so if I'm editing something and, you know, like I said, you try to keep developmental and copy separate, but sometimes you do like line editing ideally would be separate as well, but it's expensive. So you can sometimes mix in line. And so, especially with this last project, I was very proud of myself because I was like, it sounds like what you're looking for is not proofreading like you thought. It's copy, and you're going to need a lot of line editing as well. Mm. So I'm going to need to charge a little more because this is going to take more of my time. And they fully understood and they agreed and they were fine. But I was proud of myself for saying that out loud because yeah. I already include a little bit of line with developmental and copy. It's kind of hard not to ever get into line editing with those, but I knew that was going to be more so than others. And I realized I'm like, I cannot afford to spend more time on this project if I don't ask more, because it's going to take me more time and my hours cost money,
yeah.
but I'm not charging by hours. So I need to up the amount I'm charging per word, or else it's literally not worth my time. My time is kind of expensive compared to what people expect. It's actually not expensive compared to other writers and editors. But like, you know, I really need to value myself and make sure people understand that.
But ChatGPT is $25 a month.
And it's not worth it. Believe me.
Okay, so I think we got time for one more question.
Sure.
So tell us a story. Tell us about a really, really bad job that just fell apart. You were excited at the beginning, and then just things, because of the client or maybe because of the demands, maybe you took on too much, things just didn't work out. What are some of the horror stories that we can expect as a freelance writer?
Ooh, to be honest, I haven't had a lot that started fall through yet. I think one of the biggest disasters for me is, I don't know, I was successful in the end, so this maybe isn't a good answer, but it was disastrous to me personally, is when I started at the Salish Current doing journalism, I was also still a nanny almost full time. I hadn't really separated myself yet. And I was also trying to get other work, trying to get editing work and all these other things, and in school full time. And I had taken on certain stories that were supposed to be kind of longer topics where I take some time to research them. And I was also doing more like current event pieces. And then my two long-term stories became current events because like my healthcare shortage story, the Peace Health Strike happened. And so it turned into that. And I wound up having four deadlines within less like a week, 2 weeks of each other. So I had to finish four like long detailed pieces in under 2 weeks while in school full time, nannying, trying to get other work, having other events to go to in my life. And like there were days when I was in front of a screen for 10 hours straight, plus two more after that, because I had to go back to it because I had to finish this piece. And I couldn't go to bed before midnight because I was on my computer all day, every day, whenever I could be. And I like fell apart a little bit. I was like, I can't sleep. I can't eat. Like, it was just, I couldn't pull myself out of it because I felt like there was always too much pressure. And then I couldn't do anything for almost a week after that because I was just so burnt out. And my editor felt so bad. He was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize like you had so many dates stack up, because it's kind of my responsibility to communicate those things. You know, he has a whole other team of freelancers. But I hadn't really prepared myself for that workload. I hadn't set a boundary for myself or for them. And I let everything kind of stack up in a way I wasn't prepared for. And so even though I got everything in on time, I shouldn't have. Like, I should have told them I can't get this in today because I just tore myself apart thinking I need to get this work. I need to get things published. So yeah, it definitely was kind of disastrous.
Yeah. Sometimes crunch is a great motivator. Sometimes not.
Yeah, definitely. Another time I got someone's name wrong and lost a job because of that, but that's a smaller story.
That stinks.
Yeah.
It's such a small thing too.
Yeah. And it was autocorrect. So technically I didn't get it wrong. I just didn't realize it was autocorrected, but that happened twice. So it was fair.
That's funny.
Yeah. Check your autocorrect, everybody.
ChatGPT would have made that mistake.
Probably.
All right. Well, Rebecca, thank you for sitting down with me again. We have one more episode to go. Next time, we're going to be getting into your story and how someone falls into freelance writing.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds exciting, right? Doesn't it? Well, I'm sure you will be back next time. So until that time, take care and be well. See you around.